Amateur Radio Newsline report number 2019 with a release date of Friday, July 8th, 2016 to follow in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. The following is a QST. Breaking news, Amateur Electronic Supply is closing at the end of the month. National Parks on the Air goes to the White House and hams mount a tribute to 19 who died in an Arizona wildfire. All this and more in Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 2019, coming your way right now.
From around the world, this is Newsline, Amateur Radio's independent on-the-air news and bulletin service. Now, reporting from Valparaiso, Indiana, here's Paul Brown, WD9-GCO.
Before this week's report, we have a personal note and a somber one for many of us at Amateur Radio Newsline and in the larger community of amateurs. Here's Don Wilbanks, AE5DW.
We've lost another member of the Newsline family. To my knowledge, his voice was never heard in any Newsline newscast, but he was no less important. His name is Dave Booth, KC6WFS. Dave passed away June 29th. Dave was Bill Pasternak's neighbor and close friend. They were colleagues both professionally and in amateur radio. They shared a love of 6 meters, among many other common interests. Bill was a camera buff and video engineer. Dave was a camera operator for Disney. Dave Booth worked with Bill and the late Dave Bell, W6AQ, on one of the more recent ARRL amateur radio videos, 2011's The DIY Magic of Amateur Radio. Dave Booth was the principal videographer. Dave did a lot of backstage and behind-the-scenes work for Amateur Radio Newsline as well, but it was as Bill Pasternak's sounding board and confidant where Dave shined brightest. I can't tell you how many times I answered the phone over the last 20 years to be greeted by Bill's cheerful hello, only to be followed closely by, "Dave is here, say hi to Dave." That was always a treat. Those high-level Newsline planning meetings with Bill and Dave were most often held in a very special location. Dave's hot tub. Ah, Southern California living at its best. As for my memories of Dave Booth, I only had the fortune to meet him once and spend a Huntsville Hamfest weekend with him and Bill. It was sometime around 1997, I think. Dave traveled with Bill to Huntsville for the Young Ham of the Year Award presentation. It was standard practice for Bill to fly into Birmingham, Alabama, because it was less expensive. He would stay the night with David Black, KB4KCH, and as my route from South Louisiana took me through Birmingham, Bill would ride with me the 100 miles north to Huntsville. Dave was a lot of fun to hang around with that weekend. Dave and I shared a love of fast cars and motorcycles. Dave did a V8 conversion on a Datsun 240Z and shot lots of drag race pics over the years. He owned a 1968 Camaro SSRS. Knowing our shared love of Camaros and Firebirds, it was a no-brainer that I called Dave when I found my dream car, a 1973 Firebird Trans Am for sale online. The car was located in Huntington Beach, California. Dave offered to drive the 90 minutes to inspect the car and video the test drive for me. As this was 1999, pre-YouTube, that videotape in VHS-C format and the adapter required for me to play it on my full-size VHS VCR was FedExed overnight to me by Dave. I bought the car based solely on that video and Dave's opinion of the car. Were it not for Hurricane Katrina, I would still own that car. That's the kind of guy Dave Booth was, always ready and willing to help out however and whenever he could. Dave battled chronic pain and depression for most of his life. He was devastated when Bill passed away, and Dave Bell's passing only made that worse. Dave and I spoke regularly in the years since Bill's passing about matters related to Newsline and Bill's estate. I last spoke with him only a week or two before he died. He leaves behind a wife and daughter. He's in a better place now, likely a hot tub in heaven with Bill and Dave Bell. Dave Booth, KC6WFS. He was a good man. We'll miss you, Dave.
That was Amateur Radio Newsline's Don Wilbanks, AE5DW, remembering Dave Booth, KC6WFS, now a silent key. This week's newscast begins with breaking news. Amateur Electronic Supply, the second largest ham radio dealer in the United States, is closing. The Milwaukee-based seller plans to shut its doors at the end of the month after more than 50 years of serving the amateur radio community. Amateur Electronics Supply has four locations, its corporate headquarters in Milwaukee, the Cleveland area, Las Vegas, and Orlando, Florida. The business began as a venture by then 18-year-old Terry Sturman, W9DIA, in Milwaukee in 1957. It was founded as Amateur Electronics Supply, LLC, in 1998, according to business records, including Bloomberg. Terry Sturman became a silent key in 1999. Arizona's tragic Yarnell Hill fire isn't likely to be forgotten, and neither are the 19 firefighters whose lives were claimed in the 2013 blaze. Amateur Radio Newsline's Mike Askins, KE5-CXP, reports on some of the hams are making sure that those memories stay fresh.
In Prescott, Arizona, June 30th marks a painful anniversary. On that date in 2013, wild firefighting specialists known as the Granite Mountain Hotshots set out to safeguard the former gold mining town of Yarnell from an advancing blaze. That brave effort left the hotshot unit virtually destroyed, with only one of the 20 men surviving their mission. This past June 30th also marked another anniversary, the third year of the Yavapai Amateur Radio Club's special event station operated in memory and in honor of those who perished. The amateurs worked the bands with the call N7GMH, and despite poor conditions on several of them, completed almost 300 contacts, mostly from points east. By all accounts, it was an emotional tribute, said Don Bauer, WB7TPH. Quote, quite a few of our contacts are from people who are or have been either firefighters or wildland firefighters. They, of course, share in the loss of these men, end quote. Doug Freeman, KV8TD, said the event's success is measured not just in its contacts, but in the sense of appreciation the community had for the on-air activity. Freeman said that before the station began this year's operation, he got to speak to Brendan McDonough, the sole survivor of the 2013 fire, and to two women who worked with the firefighters' families. Of McDonough, Freeman said, quote, if he had not been out of town, Brendan would have joined us at the station, end quote. N7GMH worked out of the club station in and at one of several coordinated home stations. The contact stayed as local as Prescott on 2 meters, and on HF, as far away as New York, Georgia, Puerto Rico, Canada, and even Venezuela. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Mike Askins, KE5-CXP.
Marking the National Parks Centennial, one group of Washington, D.C. area hams recently elected themselves to the White House. That is to say, they elected to operate there on the grounds. Here's my report on those hams with not quite presidential ambitions.
If your goal is to get to the White House in an election year, it usually means a lot of campaigning, debating, shaking hands, and expensive television ads. Unless you happen to be the Hack DC Amateur Radio Club in Washington, D.C., then all you need is a portable radio, a small antenna, and permission. They recently operated from the White House grounds, which is an actual national park. I recently spoke with Don Jones, K6ZO, who said they had a whole lot of fun. In fact, they had so much fun.
We had so much fun that we're going to come back on the 25th of August for a full-blown day, which is August 25th is the day that the National Park celebrates their 100th anniversary.
Jones said that for the short time they were on the air this first time, they made quite a few contacts.
We were on 20-meter CW mainly, and we were there doing a demonstration for about 30 minutes, and we made 22 contacts. We had a special call sign, which was Whiskey 3 Hotel for White House. Propagation was real good.
They planned to return, but next time they want it to be much bigger.
We just slid in and out with a backpack and a portable station, but we're going to go down and find out from the national parks what we need to do, because we want to set up like a tent, a banner, sort of celebrate the centennial with the Park Service.
If you're in the Washington, D.C. area and want to find out more about the club, visit the website at hacdc.org and listen for them to be on the air again this August. They still won't have to buy television time or kiss any babies, though. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Paul Brown, WD9GCO. Time for you to identify your station. We are the Amateur Radio Newsline, heard on bulletin stations around the world, including the K7MRG repeater in Prescott, Arizona, on Tuesday evenings. Amateur radio's response has to be real,
whether the earthquake is the real thing too or just simulated, as was the case in Western Canada. Amateur Radio Newsline's John Williams, VK4JJW, has that story.
The special effects company spared no effort when it came to simulating the devastating after effects of a magnitude 9 earthquake. But this Pacific Coast scene wasn't conjured up by some Hollywood script. This was the west coast of Canada's Vancouver Island, where disabled landlines and knocked-out cellular service could have been real, but weren't. What was real, however, were the Canadian Forces patrol planes flying over the Rockies and the ham radio operators on the ground relaying disaster and rescue information to them using amateur radio frequencies. The fictional earthquake was followed by at least two equally fictional tsunamis, bringing disaster to Port Alberni, northwest of Victoria, Canada. That region is home to about 18,000 people, and that part is not fiction. Hence the need for the drill, called Exercise Coastal Response. In all, more than 600 people and 60 organizations took part in the three-day response staged by the government of British Columbia, and thankfully not Mother Nature. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm John Williams, VK4JJW.
Boy Scouts on the air as K2BSA aren't just operating, they're upgrading. Here's the story from Amateur Radio Newsline's Bill Stearns, NE4RD.
This week in Radio Scouting, we have three Scout camps on the air as K2BSA, an upcoming Radio ScoutNet, and the Scout Lone Stations are being upgraded. Our portable Zero Station is still active at Camp Geiger in St. Joseph, Missouri, and will continue to be through July 22nd. Our portable 5 station at the Philmont Scout Ranch continues as well in New Mexico through September 1st. Finally, our portable 8 station at Camp Wynadot in Wakeman, Ohio, will continue to be active on Wednesdays through July 21st. Chris Overby, KB5UBT, has volunteered to host a monthly radio scouting net on the second Thursday of every month. His first net will be at 10 p.m. Central Time, Thursday, July 14th, which is also 0300 UTC Friday, July 15th. Frequency is 7.190 MHz plus or minus the QRM. Chris is located in the Dallas, Texas area. ICOM America has provided 10 complete stations for loan to local councils since 2012. They are now in the process of updating their kits, replacing the IC7200 with the new IC7300. With its touchscreen and pan adapter display, it meets scouts where they live, with their smartphone. Please help support this activity and others involving youth and amateur radio by working and spotting them on the air and online. For more information on K2BSA and radio scouting, please visit www.k2bsa.net. For Amateur Radio Newsline and the K2BSA Amateur Radio Association, this is Bill Stearns, NE4RD.
DXers should keep their receivers tuned to hear Aurelio, IZ8EGM, in Monaco, where he is active as 3Alpha/IZ8EGM until July 15th. He's working on a variety of HF bands, so send QSLs via his home call sign. Martinez, HK3Y, will be active between July 18th and July 23rd as 5J0Y from San Andres Island. He'll be working a few of the HF bands, so listen up. He's on the air to commemorate Colombian independence. Send QSLs to HK3Y. Addy, DK5ON, is working as EA6/DK5ON holiday style from Mallorca Island until July 22nd. Send QSLs via DK5ON, direct, by the Bureau, or Logbook of the World. In Mississippi, one group of hams finally found the perfect site for their much-needed repeater. Perfect. Except that it had no power source other than the sun shining overhead. Amateur Radio Newsline's Kent Peterson, KC0DGY, tells what happened next.
We're hoping here in the next few weeks to get the word out about the solar-powered repeater. I think it's very exciting. It's good to know that the state of Mississippi has just acquired its first solar-powered UHF repeater, and look forward to a lot of good uses from this system for the next few years.
That's Matt Hickman, AF5FM, of Pontotoc, Mississippi. He was looking for a repeater site in his county, and he found one.
It's an abandoned farm complex. There's four grain storage silos, and that is where we had the antenna mounted, on one of the silos. The silo was about 92 feet above the ground.
With absolutely no AC power on that abandoned farm.
Initially, we were going to go with a site that already had power, but availability just wasn't there.
So Matt designed a solar charging battery system to power his UHF repeater.
We have so far put together two different separate arrays totaling 225 watts. The first array is a 150-watt array, that powers just nothing but the radio, just the repeater. The second array is a 75-watt array with its own battery, and it powers just the controller.
Matt says he has some voltage monitoring relays, so should one side of the solar charging battery system drop below a prescribed level, it will switch over to the other battery, assuring the repeater will stay on the air.
We started out trying to decide the integrity of the system. We decided that the system would have to be able to run at least 24 hours nonstop on continuous use. One of the biggest factors that we learned along this endeavor was that summertime and wintertime plays a big difference in how much charging output you're able to collect from the sun during those seasons.
His project will continue to grow.
As we approach September, we're looking to have to add another 225-watt array. We'll have to double the array in order to carry it through the winter months.
After figuring in the duplexer and feedline losses and the gain of the antenna, Matt's repeater is pushing out a bit less than 100 watts effective power.
It's actually getting out about 18 miles from the site. That's pretty much right to all the borders of the county, north, south, east, and west. As it stands, I think it'll be going for a very long time. We've really had a lot of fun from this project, and we learned a lot about how solar arrays work and what demands that the system calls for when you're trying to wire your energy from the sun.
For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Kent Peterson, KC0DGY.
Speaking of going green, we close this week's newscast with another story about the power of green energy on the air. Operating on the power of the sun and wind at a site in Ireland, one noted contester has his hopes as high as the hill he works from. Here's Newsline's Jeremy Boot, G4NJH.
It's summer, and Olivier, ON4EI/EIHGQB, is back on his familiar hilltop in Ireland. More than any other radio amateur, he's truly in his elements. In this case, the elements happen to be mostly wind and sun, and he's using both to power his station. Olivier has big plans. His blog on QRZ.com describes his antenna park and the rest of his station, reminiscent of a field day setup. He'll be on the air from now until the 12th of August, using six antennas and two radios operating over five bands. Any successes he has will be down to band conditions, skilled operation, and green energy as he competes in the IAIU HF World Championship with the call sign EI1A on the 9th and the 10th of July, and in the Island on the Air contest from the 30th of July to the 31st. Olivier writes in his blog, "Wow, what a pleasure to be back again on the hill and being alone for 2 weeks in the middle of nature. This place is my lonely paradise where I can refill my social batteries." Of course, he will also be recharging his scorecard's batteries. He'll need them to qualify for the World Radio Sport Team Championship in Germany. As ambitions go, that's pretty powerful too, green energy or not. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Jeremy Boot, G4NJH, in Nottingham, in the UK.
With thanks to Allen Labs, the ARRL, Bloomberg, CQ Magazine, Hap Holly and the Rain Report, the IARU, Irish Radio Transmitter Society, the K2BSA Amateur Radio Association, Ohio Penn DX Bulletin, the Province Newspaper, QRZ, Southgate Amateur Radio News, Ted Randall's QSO Radio Show, Wireless Institute of Australia, WTWW Shortwave, the Yavapai Amateur Radio Club, and you, our listeners. That's all from Amateur Radio Newsline. Please send emails to our address at newsline@arnewsline.org. More information is available at Amateur Radio Newsline's only official website, located at www.arnewsline.org. For now, with Karen Eve Murray, KD2GUT, at the news desk in New York, and our news team worldwide, I'm Paul Brown, WD9GCO in Valparaiso, Indiana, saying 73. And as always, we thank you for listening. Amateur Radio Newsline is copyright 2016. All rights reserved.